Hey, are you ready to get a little excited this morning? Okay, good, because here's the deal. Last week, we had a record number of people come for Easter service. Awesome. Here's what's more awesome is nine people gave their life to Jesus because you invited them. How awesome is that? So fantastic. I'm so thrilled about that because that's where Gateway is trending, making an impact in people's lives. And we can't do it without you inviting and bringing people. And so we're excited about that. Just the impact that God is making in people's lives. Incredible. We are in the second week of a four-week series called I Am. And we're looking at four of the different seven I Am statements that Jesus makes in the Gospel of John. And these are statements that Jesus makes about himself that gives us a really clear picture of who Jesus is in his own words. We're going to be in John chapter 10 today, and we're going to start in verse 11. And I'd love for all of us to say this out loud together. John chapter 10, verse 11. Ready? Go. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. And the fact that Jesus said, I am the good shepherd implies that maybe there are some that are not good shepherds. And in fact, that Jesus doesn't just imply it. He says it in John chapter 10, verse 1. He says, I tell you the truth, the man who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way is a thief and a robber. Now, who is Jesus talking about at this point? You remember, every time that we study the Bible, we don't read the Bible in isolation. We read it in context, whether that's a verse or a passage, and is the case for all of the Bible. We read this in context of what happens before it. And this flows right after a story of where Jesus healed a blind beggar. This blind beggar gets kicked out of the synagogue from the religious leaders. And Jesus essentially draws a line in the sand. And this is what he said in John chapter 10, verse 10. He says, the thief's purpose is to steal and kill and destroy. But my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. How many of you, that sounds good to you? A rich and satisfying life. Now, let me be really clear here. Jesus is the good shepherd. The corrupt religious leaders are the thief. But unfortunately, there's another group of people in this story that's the sheep. Anybody have any idea who the sheep are in this story? Just say that out loud, would you? Who's the sheep? We're the sheep. Let me tell you, that's bad news, okay? Because sheep are some of the stupidest animals on the face of the planet. Did you know that? You could go to a circus, and you know what animal you're not going to see there? You're not going to see a sheep. You could train elephants. You could train donkeys. You could train dogs. You can train lions, but you can't train a sheep. In fact, the only trick that a sheep knows is how to play dead, and that only works one time when you shoot it. So after that, it doesn't work anymore. All right, so sheep are not very smart. And let me just give you four challenges. We're just gonna go through these really quickly. Four challenges of being a sheep, if you're taking notes. And the first one is this: is that sheep get lost easily. Sheep get lost easily. In fact, the Hebrew scriptures in Isaiah 53 says this. It says, all of us like sheep, all of us like sheep, have strayed away. We've left God's paths to follow our own, and yet the Lord laid on him. Who's he talking about? Jesus. And yet the Lord laid on him the sins of us all. Now, it's incredibly easy for a sheep to wander away from the shepherd's fold, and just see if you see yourself in this at all. Because a sheep will wander away and be like, I think I'll go over here. Or, I think the grass looks a little greener over here. Or, maybe I'll find satisfaction over here. I wonder why I'm being eaten by a wolf because I'm away from the shepherd. And so sheep constantly are getting lost, and so oftentimes for us, we think, we've got this propensity to wander away from the protection and the best that God has for us. We wander over here. We try to find satisfaction over here. We try to find fulfillment over here. And we wander, and sheep get lost easily. Number two, if you're taking notes, is that sheep are defenseless. Now, this is interesting to me, is that when you think about the animal kingdom, almost every animal that you can think of has some sort of defense mechanism. Some animals have claws. Some animals can fly away or can hit you with their horns or can camouflage themselves. But what do sheep have? bah, like nothing. They got nothing. Sheep have nothing. They're totally defenseless. And the reality is that on our own, without the protection of the good shepherd, we're vulnerable. And so when we think, you know, yeah, I can do it on my own, or when we think, you know, I don't need you, the truth is that we do. We need the good shepherd. Number three is that sheep are very stubborn. Sheep are very stubborn. In fact, would you turn to the person next to you and say, I think he's talking about you right now. I think he's talking about you right now. All right. And I'm looking around, and there's some of you aren't saying anything. You know why? You know why? Because you're stubborn. That's why. And so oftentimes we think, you know, I can work this out on my own. I don't need any help. Or don't tell me what to do. Or I love this, you know, I want to get out of debt. I'm held captive by debt. I've got a plan to get out of debt. And I'm going to get out of debt just as soon as I go on that vacation or buy that car. And so we're stubborn and we keep on going. In fact, I read this about sheep is that sheep so often, if they're going down a path and there's two rocks and they get lodged between the rocks, they'll just keep trying to go forward and they get themselves more stuck and more stuck because they're too stupid to go in reverse. And so sheep are stubborn. And that's what a lot of sheep are. And then last, if you're taking notes, is that sheep are filthy. Sheep are filthy, and that's not good news. You may think, I've seen sheep and they're white and they're fluffy. We're like, that dude was power washed before he went on TV. Because sheep are filthy and they're dirty and they can't clean themselves. Now, I want you to catch this because we just went through a whole lot of things about what describes sheep, that sheep get lost easily, they're defenseless, they're stubborn, they're filthy. But notice this is what religion will do. Religion will come up to a sheep and say, you know what, you're lost, you're alone, you're filthy, you stink, you're beat up, you're bleeding, and the sheep will say, yeah, that's not good news, but what do I need to do? And here's what religion will say. Religion will say, here's what you need to do. You need to clean yourself up. You need to get your act together. You need to maybe reincarnate or go to Mecca or try harder or do more or go knock on some more doors. You need to find your way back to God. You need to walk the way there. Good luck finding him. And that's not good news, is it? That doesn't help a sheep. Now, sheep have nothing. They're lost. They're alone, and it's dangerous. They don't have a defense mechanism, and religion just comes alongside and says, you blew it. Good luck. Fix it. Try harder. But what Jesus does is he comes along as the good shepherd and says, you're lost. You're alone. You're hurt. You're defenseless. Don't try it on your own. Let me pick you up, and I'll carry you all the way there. That's what Jesus does. And that's good news. That's really good news. And the reality is that there's no substitute for the good shepherd. There's no alternative for the good shepherd. Now, what I want you to see in this passage today is Jesus does essentially two things. When he shows us what he's not like, and then he shows us what he is like. I want to show you first what he's not like, verses 12 through 13. Jesus said, the hired hand is not the shepherd who owns the sheep. See, to the hired hand, sheep tending, it's just a job. This is what they do to get their paycheck. They watch the sheep, they cash in, and that's what they do. And so Jesus says, so when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. He says, I'm out of here. There's no job that's worth my life. Now, the word for abandon in the Greek language, it simply means to leave or forsake, but there's a nuance and there's some texture to this word, and here's what it is. It's very graphic. It means that the shepherd's gaze is fixed in terror on this wolf or whatever danger is coming, and so out of terror, he thinks about himself and not about the sheep. It's self-preservation. This is somebody whose instincts would not prompt him to defend the sheep. And what happens? The hired hand takes off, he runs away, and Jesus says, then the wolf attacks the flock, and he scatters it. Now, the word picture that Jesus is using here is something that we've probably all seen on National Geographic. It's like those really graphic scenes where you kind of want to look away, but you're kind of like, that's awesome. At the same time, like, it's very graphic. There's blood everywhere. It means that the wolf grabs the sheep. He snags it. He drags it away. He rips it apart. It's violent. It's gruesome. And Jesus says the man runs away because he's a hired hand, and he cares nothing for the sheep. And so for Jesus, in Jesus' day, the people that he's speaking to, they had experienced this from most of their religious leaders. These religious leaders had gotten so far from the heart and the passion of God that instead of caring for the sheep and showing them how to connect with God, these people were just a means to the end. It was just a paycheck. They were just cashing it in. They didn't actually love the sheep. And Jesus is not like that. I think the reality is that many of us have this kind of script that's playing around in the background of what we think that God is like. And maybe for some of us, we think that maybe God is far removed, or God is distant, or he's disinterested, or he's not active in our life. For some of us, because of our family of origin, we grew up with people or parents that maybe abandoned us or neglected us or wounded us in some way. And so for us, we transfer that mental image of what our parents were like onto what God is like. And Jesus is painting us this picture. He's saying God is not like that. But what is Jesus like? Well, if you're taking notes, write this in. Number one is that Jesus rescues us. We see this in John chapter 10, verse 11. Jesus rescues us. He says this, "I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. This idea is so important that Jesus repeats this 5 times in this story. The shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. What does it mean? It means that the shepherd is willing to expose himself to any danger so that the sheep don't have to experience it. That the shepherd, when the wolf or the lion comes to attack the sheep, is going to stand between the sheep and the danger and say, "Not on my watch. You are not coming to these sheep. You have to go through me to get to these sheep." And that's what Jesus is like. It means that he's not going to bail on us when things get tough. This is exactly what the Bible says what Jesus is like in another place. Mark chapter 10, verse 45, Jesus said, "But for even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a" what? "As a ransom for many." The word ransom is the Greek word lutron. And it refers to the price that was paid to free a slave. And so you'd have these slave markets and people buying and selling slaves, and you would have a good person that would come and they would want to rescue and free and buy the freedom for a slave, and they would pay lutron. And that's exactly what Jesus does. In fact, in Psalm 49, it says that while no one could pay the ransom for the life of another person, God had made the way. Later on in the story, Jesus says, "The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it up again." Just catch that for a second. The reason my Father loves me is that I lay down my life only to take it. Did you know that one of the reasons why God the Father loves God the Son is because he lays his life down for you? That should tell you in a huge picture how much God loves you. The reason that God the Father loves God the Son is because Jesus lays down his life for you. In a world where so many people have been made to feel unimportant, Jesus says, "You are so important that I would lay down my life for you." But not only does Jesus rescue us, but Jesus knows us deeply. Verses 14 and 15, Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd." How do we know this? He says, "I know my sheep and my sheep know me." I know my sheep. The Greek word for know is the Greek word gnosko, and it's so much more than just a knowledge of facts, like you're wearing a plaid shirt or you have brown hair and blue eyes. It's the most intimate way of knowing another person. It's the way a husband and wife know each other. It's the way somebody knows another person when you know what they're going to say before they say it. You know what they're going to do before they do it. It's this very intimate way of knowing another person. Now, let me stop there for a second, because there are some of us that have come in this morning and we've been thinking, maybe not cognitively, but somewhere deep in our soul, we've been thinking, "Does anybody even care what I'm going through? Does anybody even know what I'm going through?" And what you need to know this morning is that Jesus does, that Jesus knows his sheep. Now, Jesus takes this even further by adding, he says, I know my sheep, and my sheep know me just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. Later on in verse 30, it says, I and the Father are one. That Jesus is bound to the sheep just as he is bound to the Father. He can no more lose his sheep than he could lose his Father. He can no less think of his sheep than he could think of his Father. That there is an inseparableness of you and the Father. That you are always on Jesus' mind. That he was always thinking about you and always knowing what you're going through and deeply involved in what you're going through. Not only does Jesus rescue us, not only does Jesus know us, the third one, though, if you're taking notes, is that Jesus is relentlessly pursuing lost sheep. Jesus is relentlessly pursuing lost sheep. Verse 16 says, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen, and I must bring them also. Listen to that. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd. A word for when Jesus says, I must bring them, it's the must of divine necessity. Like there's force to it. Like there's tremendous force behind the must. In other words, there is no question. I will do this. When he says, I must do this, I will do this. It's not possible that I will fail in this, that he is relentlessly pursuing them. And even though the long-running theme throughout the scriptures is God's relentless pursuit of people, in Jesus' day, the religious leaders kept away from people. They kept away from the people that were not good enough or not pure enough or not religious enough, and don't associate with them, do not talk with them, do not eat with them, don't go where they go. And they had built this kind of theological wall around themselves to insulate themselves from the world. And yet there's this huge contrast between these corrupt religious leaders who kept away from people and didn't help them find the way back to God, and Jesus, who is always breaking down barriers to include as many people as possible because he's relentlessly pursuing his lost sheep. See, there is no barrier, there is no people group, there is no ideology, there is no lifestyle to which Jesus can't overcome to reach his lost sheep. He is relentlessly pursuing people. And so what I want you to hear this morning is the posture that Jesus takes towards you. Whatever you have thought about God, whatever you've thought about Jesus, whatever, the posture that Jesus takes towards you is this. It's one of rescue. Not just of the small stuff, but of our greatest need in being able to know God. Jesus rescues us. And Jesus knows you. That you're not alone in anything that you go through. You're not abandoned. You're not forgotten. You are deeply known by him, and you are always on Jesus' mind. He's always thinking about you. And not only that, is that he relentlessly pursues those who are far from God. And the truth is that if you don't have a relationship with God, or you've wandered away from God, the truth is that you're not waiting for God to reveal himself to you. He's waiting for you to receive the gift that he's already given you, already made available to you. He is already there waiting for you. And I want you to see, would you look how wonderful Jesus is? He does all of this for us. Now, I want you to see this also, is that Jesus' great desire is that all people would know him. But that desire for all people to know him didn't stop with Jesus' work on the earth, but it also flows through his followers. One of the last things that Jesus says as he had his group of disciples together in John chapter 20, verse 21, he said, as the Father has sent me, even so I am sending you. Listen to that. As the Father sent me, as God the Father sent God the Son to rescue, to redeem, to restore, as God the Father sent God the Son, so I am sending you. That in the DNA of every person that calls themselves a follower of Jesus, in the core of who we are, is this nature of sentness, that we are always going, that we are always sent, that we are always Jesus through us reaching and restoring and redeeming, that is our calling. And the question that has surfaced for me as I've studied this and prepared this message What would happen if we received Jesus as he's offering himself to us? What would happen if we really held and really believed Jesus as he gave himself to us, as our rescuer, that Jesus knows us? If we really deeply, intrinsically held and believed that Jesus knows us and rescues us, how would that change? And the second thing is how would it change our life if we took up Jesus' passion as our own passion? And I must bring them. Here's why I ask this. I read a stat this last week that really shocked me. It goes like this. 86% of people that come to church, they come to church because somebody invited them to church. 86%. That's not too shocking, right? Most people that come to church, they come to church because a friend or a coworker or family member has invited them to church. 46% of people that have decided to follow Jesus can trace that decision to follow Jesus back to somebody inviting them to church. So 86% of people come to church because they're invited. 46% can trace their decision to follow Jesus back to being invited. And yet only 2% of people in the United States that call themselves Christians invite people to church. Is that not shocking? 86, 46, but only 2% of us actually make the effort to bring other people. Jesus says, I must bring them. This divine necessity. I'm so passionate about people that there's no way I can let people go the other way on my watch. I must bring them. This divine necessity, I must bring them. And I just wonder what would happen if that passion of Jesus became our own passion, that I must bring them, because that's our calling. And Jesus said this in Matthew 28. He said, all authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. And so what's he say? With all of his authority, Jesus is with all of his authority. This is what he says. He says, therefore what? Therefore go and make disciples. You know, you can't make disciples. People can't become a disciple of Jesus unless a disciple of Jesus goes to them. Therefore go. And my prayer for us as Gateway family, that we would so receive Jesus as he gives himself to us, that we would so have our identity framed around what Jesus says about us, that we would deeply believe who we are based off of what Jesus has done for us, that I am known by him, and I am loved by him, and I am pursued by him, that our identity would be shaped by Jesus, but then we would go and be bringers, because Jesus, that's his great passion, because we're all about Jesus. I want to invite us this morning to pray, because there's an awful lot on the line. There's an awful lot on the line.